Do you accept any piece of mail that is sent to you? Like if you received, oh, I don't know, a porcelain doll from a family friend that you haven't talked to in many, many years. Is that a gift you really want to have your kids be playing with? Well, that happened to one of our listeners, and you'll hear the story in a recent EPP bonus episode. More importantly, what happened with the doll that was received in EPP bonus episode number 53 at Real Ghost Stories Online.
I'd become an EPP for this story alone.
Sign up to get it. Click become an EPP at realghoststoriesonline.com. It's only $5 a month to get that episode and all of our bonus episodes. And you keep our show on the air. That's what it's all about. Please support us. Keep us going. And enjoy the creepy content. Sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
And on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, a female acquaintance speaks to a man about making time to get together. But in the morning, he realizes it could not have really been her that he spoke to. House hunting should be fun, right? It was, until a pair of sisters visit a particular house. In the mountains of Kentucky, a young man finds that the shotgun he owns may not protect him from what is in his mama's house. And while working in a museum, two employees cannot locate the source of the piano playing. Those stories, your calls, and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again. Oh, I should turn your mic on.
You have always looked for a way to mute me, and now you have
Look
one.
At that. Look there at that. Go. It works.
So how are you?
I'm doing well.
Good.
I'm looking forward to these stories. This looks like it should be pretty fun.
Yeah.
The museum thing is interesting, because weren't we just talking about that the other day?
Haunted museums, yeah.
Where it seems like that would seem to make a lot of sense as far as being a location that would likely hold a lot of ghostly activity.
Mm-hmm.
Not just Night at the Museum stuff where all the little figurines come to life.
Sure.
but paranormal things. So I'm interested in hearing that story. Of course, if you have a real ghost story, you can share it with us. The phone number is 855-853-4802. Or, of course, you can also write in on our website at realghoststoriesonline.com. So lots of ways to get your stories to us here at the show. And this is going out on the 30th day of September.
Okay.
Because 30 days has September,
mm-hmm.
April, June, and November.
Okay.
All the rest have 31, is that right?
Except for February.
Mm-hmm. I could never remember that thing. That little saying. My mom always said it. That's how she remembered how many days were in months, and I always screwed it up. I just knew it started with the September.
I still have to look it up. I mess it up.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I do know that this is the last day in September that this show is being released on. So that means shows from here for the next 31 days.
Mm-hmm.
Halloween month.
Yes.
Ouija awareness shows.
Yes.
So I think we should do like a little PSA at the beginning of each one about Ouija boards. And we can like kind of reference previous stories like, you don't want to end up like so-and-so. And because here's what, you know, for Ouija Awareness Month. But there you go. I'm excited because that's usually when we have a lot of really good stories that start coming in, because then everybody starts kind of coming out of the woodwork going, oh, I have a ghost story. I don't like to share this with anyone, but here it is. So it should be some fun episodes coming up. Let's kick off the show today with a letter from Jason. And Jason writes in, my story isn't really about ghosts, but I think more of the spirit of my dad. I woke up on a Thursday morning, I believe, to my stepmom telling me that my dad was in the hospital. He had left for work early, and we believe he had a heart attack at the red light. A lady found him and went to get a police officer, which from there an ambulance was called, and they did CPR on my dad for 20 minutes and shocked him around 20 times, which is way more than they usually do. But they said since he was showing signs of life, they kept going. Anyways, just like a bad movie, me and my stepmom were pulled into a room at the hospital and told he was in a coma and they didn't expect him to wake up. I started praying for God to save him, but then I read a passage to just pray for what God wants, because really, he knows what's going to happen anyway. So I just started to pray that whatever happened at that point, I would find peace with the outcome. That second day, he was in a coma. I wanted to pray over my dad. Everyone was visiting him, and I stood in the hall, my Bible in my back pocket. I was waiting for everyone to say their goodbyes and to just see him exit, because that next day was when we were cutting off the machines because they had said his brain stem, or something of that nature, was fried. So if he was to wake up, he wouldn't mentally be there. Back to me, standing in the hallway. I was standing there and just kind of thinking, I really wish someone would pray with me. Just when the last person was leaving, my cousin came running down the hall asking if he could see Don, my dad. I said, yeah, and he stood there and asked me, hey, bud, do you think you would want to pray with me over your dad? I just looked at him in disbelief and said, yes. I'd really like to pray over him myself. The day before, I had highlighted some Bible verses that I was going to read, so when we were standing there, I told my cousin to go first. He was standing on the left side of my dad, and my cousin was on the right side. I pulled up the first verse I wanted to read, and would you guess, my cousin started reading the verse. So as I scrambled to find the highlighted verses, I came to this one, Isaiah 40, verse 31, which reads, "But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on the wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint." As I got about halfway, my cousin said my name, "Jason, look, Jason, look." I looked up and my cousin said, "Dude, did you see that?" I didn't see anything, he said. "When you were reading, your dad's arm lifted up like he was trying to hug you." Kind of shocked, I started reading, but then would look up and it happened. His right arm lifted off the bed like he was reaching for me. I started crying because it was incredible. The next day, my dad passed away. Before he did, we all gathered around his bed, the close family, and told stories about him, and tears would fall down his face. I really think he could hear us, but from what he'd been through, there wasn't any way to recover. A couple days later, at the funeral, my uncle, his brother, came up to me and said he wanted to give me this prayer card with my dad's name on it. He said thanks and looked down to read it. My eyes filled with tears. It read, "Donald, proud ruler, but those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint." Isaiah 40, 31. Then that Monday, when I was going to work, I was still in shock and my dad wasn't with me, anymore. It was a cloudy day. I made a small video for my dad that I played at his funeral, just photos of him and the family to remember all the fun times together. I played the song There Will Be Day by Jeremy Camp. The Monday, driving to work, I turned under a bridge and was heading down the road when that song came on the radio and the clouds parted and the sun beamed down towards me. I cried, but I also was smiling. I know it was my dad's way of telling me that he'll always be watching me, that he's still with me. I think he had a part in all the events that happened in that couple of days. He was my first person to ever lose that I love so much. Side note, you don't have to share this story. I know it's long and not really ghost, but it means so much to me. Thanks for taking the time to read my story. And if you have any comments, I'd love to hear from you guys. Love the show.
I think sometimes, even before people are technically gone, their spirit can be outside their body and kind of almost already acting like a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe that was the case here.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of people that go through these sort of things. And a lot of times you're looking for signs and you're looking for things that seem to make sense, that the at least show the other person that you're thinking about is okay on the other side. And there's a lot of things like this that happen to people. And you can write them off if you want to as, you know, coincidence or this or that. But, you know, I think more times than not, I think that they have legitimacy to them. I think there really is something that you can connect with. And I think that there's actually the other person making themselves known through some of these signs. I don't think it's always just write it off. I think it happens. And I think it is our loved ones letting us know they are okay. The phone number here is 855-853-4802. Of course, you can also write it on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Let's go over to Cody. Cody writes in, "Hey, Tony and Jenny, I just wanted to say before I start my story, I want to say I love the podcast and makes my whole workday go by a little faster listening to others' stories. But my story takes place years ago while I was in high school. Back then, I was playing bass guitar in a band with my three best friends, and we would get together once or twice a week to play with each other. Now, I got very close to these guys during this time, and my guitar player's girlfriend always would talk to me in social media telling me, 'You seem so cool. We need to hang out sometime.' And such like that, talking on and off for a year. Well, one night as I'm getting ready to fall asleep and very tired, I'm laying in bed facing the wall and start to hear a girl talk to me saying, 'Hey, it's so nice to meet you. I've wanted to hang out with you for so long. I'm Annie.' And me being tired and not thinking much about it responded, 'Yeah, it's nice to meet you too. I'm Cody.' Then it hits me. It's not a voice I recognize and turn over to see a blue light glow disappear. Freaked out by this, I go upstairs to see if anyone is up, and the house is quiet and all lights are out. I realize maybe it was a real feeling dream. So I go back to bed. Next morning, I wake up on Saturday and to start my day and having band practice later that day, I get a phone call from our lead singer to tell me our guitar player's girlfriend, Annie, passed away last night in a car accident. When he told me, a cold chill went down my spine, remembering what happened the night before, thinking my buddy's girlfriend's name is Annie. I've never seen or heard from Annie again about it to this day. Was it really her or was it a dream? I don't know. I just think what a coincidence that the girl's name was Annie who was talking to me, and the same buddy's girlfriend's name was the same. A few other stories to share and might write again soon. Thanks, guys. Love the show." I wonder how that went over when he had the discussion with his buddy. Like, "Hey, yeah, me and your girlfriend have been chatting behind your back for the last year or so. And I know she's dead and all, so I mean, obviously nothing's going to happen. But I think she came to me after she died, too." That'd be an awkward conversation, especially if she didn't make an appearance to the buddy, but she showed up to the other guy. Little interesting, and very peculiar. It's like even from the other side, she's still interested. Odd story. That's a good one, though. Thank you for writing in and sharing that with us. The phone number, of course, 855-853-4802. If you like our show, we ask for some support to keep it on the air. We only ask $5 a month from our listeners. That gets you access to our bonus episodes that we put out once a week, and you get access to all the previous ones, too. There's almost 60 of them sitting out there for you. You can enjoy all of those. Our archived episodes that are too old to be on iTunes. And, of course, you get exclusive video content as well when you sign up to be an EPP. So check that out. RealGhostStoriesOnline.com. Click Become an EPP. It is that easy. Maya writes in, "When my sister decided that it was time to purchase a home, I felt a kind of proprietary urge to be part of the process. We spent hours poring over Google Maps trying to tour all of the homes before we actually went out with a realtor. When the day finally arrived to view some of the houses we had so carefully chosen, we dressed in comfortable shoes, made sure our mental checklist of needs and wants were fully fleshed out, and dragged my sister's friend Thomas along with us. We arrived early to the first house, located in Ferndale, Michigan, off a major street. It was a surprisingly nice find for the price, though this was at the height of the housing market's downward spiral and houses were being sold for absolute steals. We checked the roof, the foundation, the quality of all the windows, and walked around to the backyard to check its suitability for my sister's dog. It was nice. An older ranch home, like all the others in the neighborhood. We were laughing and joking, having a great time, planning my sister's move. We walked from the backyard down the driveway, The kitchen window and the side door faced the driveway. We took another gander at the house before coming up short. On the window, there was a white handprint. It looked vaguely like someone pressed a soap-covered hand against the window over the sink. But the house was empty, completely unoccupied. And the handprint had not been there before we walked to the backyard. We booked it out of there to where Thomas's car was parked on the street. When the realtor came, we politely let her know that we didn't need to see the inside of that house. Thomas left, and we rode along with the realtor. We looked at two more homes. One had been foreclosed on, and the vacating residents absolutely demolished the inside of the home. The other needed way too much work. The next house was nice. Brand new windows, finished attic, creating another bedroom, newish, horribly beigey pink carpet, horrible pink paint everywhere, but that was an easy fix. We walked through the living room, dining room, first floor bedrooms, checked the bathroom and kitchen. The finishings were dated, but nice enough. Very well maintained, if of a shabby chic style that didn't suit my sister. It was pretty clear that an older woman had resided in the home. My sister and I kept hearing strange noises. Didn't sound like pipes in the old home when you first turn water on it. It sounded like something actually banging in the pipes, creaking and clanging. We went to the basement to check it out. The realtor worried that perhaps something was leaking in the basement or hanging loose, but nothing was found. We kept hearing a loud clanging sound from the basement ceiling. Walking back upstairs, I felt kind of weird compulsion to run up the steps. I didn't, but the echoes of our footsteps just seemed off. We began climbing the stairs to the second floor. The clanging noises had stopped, but I certainly hadn't forgotten them. It was such an off-putting noise that the visit to the upstairs was more of a perfunctory gesture than real interest. Something was clearly wrong with the plumbing in the home, and that was more than my sister was willing to deal with as a first-time homeowner. We looked at the final rooms. Ugly pinkish carpet was everywhere. We began trailing back downstairs. When we hit the hallway to reach the front door, the realtor stopped at the entrance to the living room. She bent down and picked something up. A penny. The realtor walked a little further into the room, my sister and I looking in from behind her. All over the living room were piles of pennies. Piles! Looked like several dollars worth of change. We didn't say anything, just quietly walked out the door, with the realtor quickly bringing up the rear. My sister and I looked at each other, looked at the house, and got back in the car without a word. Needless to say, my sister gave up her interest in home ownership for quite a while and moved into a newer apartment complex.
I don't know that I would still feel up to buying a house if, like, it seemed like two out of every three were haunted that you went to.
It's like a realtor that's on a mission to sell you a haunted house.
Yeah, the soapy handprint, that I think would have bothered me more than the random pennies showing up.
What's up with the piles of pennies?
Well, and it sounds like they weren't there when they first went through.
You would think there'd be something you'd notice
right
away. It's just being kind of odd. Like, oh, this is interesting. Okay, maybe kids were playing or something. And if you walk in the house and you see that, you can kind of write it off. It's like, well, they probably should have tidied up. That's kind of shitty.
Yeah.
But if it's there suddenly after it, that's a little odd.
Yeah.
Is there something that goes along with that?
I don't know if it has any significance or anything, but it just is odd. It's like a, you know, one of those, it wasn't there 5 minutes ago. How did all these pennies get here silently?
Yeah, very, very odd. I wonder if real estate agencies have like that one realtor where it's like, oh, so-and-so, they're the ones that deal with the houses we think are haunted. They're really good at selling them.
Could be.
You know, there's like just the one that gets those listings when they come in. They get assigned, like, yep. You're good at these ones. It's all yours. Here's another one.
Yeah.
Whether they play it down so nobody, you know, makes people feel comfortable in the homes. I can't imagine it's usually a selling point.
No, I could see those being the homes that are really, hey, look at all the potential equity just by buying it, just because you've got to do stuff to it.
Just because a whole family was massacred in the basement by an unknown entity. We don't know if it was a person, animal, that immediately the value you're getting here, folks. This is a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing what magic erasers can do.
Yeah, exactly.
You buy this house, I will get you a lifetime supply of magic erasers to take care of all the blood stains. They just keep reappearing, even though you clean it.
I will never think of this the same about magic erasers now.
Why?
Now I'm going to think about cleaning up blood stains with them every time I use them.
You know what? It works great.
God.
855-853-4802. Here's a phone number to call it Real Ghost Stories Online. That's one of those things where you could like slip it into a conversation just to get a reaction, but act like very nonchalant about it. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, it's amazing. Like somebody start talking about the magic erasers for like, oh, getting pen off a sofa or something, you know?
Yeah.
And like, you know, everybody's kind of telling their magic eraser story because everybody seems to have something that they magically got rid of. And it's like, oh, blood.
Mm-hmm.
Pen, you know, mm-hmm. And then just keep going.
Or somebody mentions blood and you're like, but you have to use it with this. And
yeah.
You have to use it with like baking soda
and
hydrogen peroxide. And you go into details on how to get the stain off the wall.
Oh, that would be funny and disturbing all at the same time.
Yeah.
Be a great way to lose friends.
Yes.
855-853-4802 is our number. Angela writes in, hello, RGSO. My name is Angela. I'm 22 now, and the story is going to be one of many that has occurred to me over the years of my life. I'm from Southern California, but this one time was my one trip to Canada visiting extended family. My entire household family came to visit my great aunt in Canada. So that is me, 13-year-old female, my sister 16, my two older brothers in their 20s, both my parents and my grandparents. My great aunt lived in this large cookie-cutter mansion that had 7 bedrooms and a 3-story home. The basement, the mid-level, and the top floor. The house has this large oak wood staircase in the middle of the house that was in a spiral form from the basement up to the top. My grandparents were unable to go up or down any sort of stairs, so they made their camp in the living room. What no one knew was that my aunt lived by herself and absolutely loved porcelain dolls more than anything. Well, this sounds like a lovely experience.
Yeah.
Every single room in the house had up to 10 porcelain dolls the size of small paperweights to life-size on stands, tables, chairs, shelves. They were just plastered everywhere. That's where to step in and go, okay, we need to have you evaluated.
It's like a 7-bedroom house, too.
Are you okay? Is everything okay in there? Everyone in my family agreed it is extremely creepy, but we were not going to be rude, so we didn't touch them except at night to go to sleep. More people need to be rude to their family when this shit is going on. Because I think sometimes people just need the little reminder of this is a little odd.
Yeah.
A little awkward, especially like in hoarding situations. Before it gets way the hell out of control and you can't get into rooms and cats are missing for years, somebody needs to step in. Yeah, you know, maybe lay off the QVC a little bit.
Feel better?
Just a little bit.
Okay.
Yes. We would turn them around. My grandparents would put the dolls in the closet near the stairwell and upstairs in the 4 rooms. Parents in one, aunts in one, my sister and I in one. My brother shared one. We put the dolls in the closets. By the end of the trip, let's say my brothers and sisters and I slept in one room, but not because of the dolls, but because what was behind them. My great aunt was always at work and never really home, so we always had the opportunity to run around the house. There was always this dark feeling of being watched or something playing with us that we would shrug off and eventually forget once we were outside. The inside of the house was stale and magnetic, as if certain places would draw you in closer than others. The most curious was the basement. A large wood stairwell would spiral down in a dark abyss that felt as though it would not let your eyes focus even in the brightness of the sun shining through the top of the staircase. We only went down there once when we were given a tour by my aunt when we first came and knew instantly to never go there alone. Apparently there were 3 more bedrooms downstairs. 2 bedrooms and a bar that of which was all entirely empty because she sought no use for it. There was, however, at the very end of the bar, a teddy bear the size of an entire corner. It was from the floor to the ceiling, a brown teddy bear with a big red bow draped around the neck and big black eyes that seemed to be watching. It's like that video game that kids play, that on the app where it's like Five Nights at Freddy's or whatever.
Okay.
It's the creepy dolls and everything. We were there only 2 weeks. Small things would occur randomly. We were there. The lights would turn off and on. The feeling of being watched was always there. And the stove would turn itself on and off randomly. We tried to reason and figure out reasons why things were occurring. Faulty wiring, bad piping, etc. On the one occasion that I would never forget was this one time my second eldest brother, Gary, and I stayed in the house for a day. It was just us two. Everyone went somewhere. I do not remember, unfortunately. Gary decided to sit in one of the living rooms, and I went about organizing my personal belongings. I wanted to go find Gary, as the silence of the house was almost deafening and the loneliness of being by yourself felt almost dreadful. I went to the mid-level looking for Gary. Every room, one after another, was empty. I even went outside screaming, "Gary, Gary!" I went back inside yelling for Gary, thinking he was playing a game. I opened every pantry and every closet. I began panicking. Why would he leave me here without telling me? I began worrying. I then thought, well, maybe Gary went to the basement. Gary was always the curious one. He was always getting into something one way or another. There were no working lights or the stairs. The time is about 5 p.m. and the sun began settling. I ventured down slowly on the stairwell. Things became dark and colder with every step I took. I got to the bottom and felt this overwhelming sensation of dread and despair. I felt a breath on my face as if something, alike to a sulfuric halitosis smell, came into my nostril, and I felt every hair stand up on my body. I felt my heart stop, and immediately I ran back up the stairs, unable to make a sound. I don't know whether or not my heart was beating at this point. I only felt claws on my ankles, and I was scampering upwards to the light. It felt like an eternity of slipping back down and getting back up. I finally made it to the top of the stairs, and there was Gary. He told me he was in the living room the whole time and didn't even hear me yell his name once. He saw that I was white and a look of fear in my eyes, as if he knew I saw something down in the basement. He told me to go outside with him and watch the sunset and talk about it. He knew immediately something had happened. I asked him over and over, "Where were you? How did you not hear me?" Not once did he hear me. He didn't even see me going through every room or anything at all. He told me all he heard was movement from the basement, and he came to look, and there was me, just white as a ghost, heart finally began beating and trying to catch up. I never went close to the basement or looked at it ever again during our trip. I do not know if I saw anything, only felt myself immersed in a black shadow of the unknown. I'll never know if I will ever go back. I'm not sure if my great aunt is even still alive, as we lost contact with family years ago. Gary to this day says he didn't hear or see me. I'll never know what happened entirely. Did something put a blanket between our realities, or was something playing with us? I'd like to know what it is. Any thoughts or ideas would mean the world to me. That is one incident of many. Sorry for writing so much. 9 years later, I'm still spooked, but that by that day. Thank you for being an awesome podcast. I love listening to you folks. You have a great day.
I think the biggest problem with this story is it's one of the dolls that's holding something as far as an entity attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck figuring out which one it is, because if there's that many dolls, if there's 7 bedrooms of dolls, there's no way to know which one it is.
I'm going to guess that the aunt knows.
You think so?
I'm going to guess the aunt, there's something there. There's something going on with the aunt and the paranormal. There's a connection.
Okay.
In my feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I with that many dolls, the bear, I don't know. I just get this vibe that there's something where it's like, and this is going to sound hokey somewhat, but there's something going on where it's like trying to bring these things to life.
Huh.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's just the weird feeling I get. Whether or not anything is ever actually coming to life is a whole other story.
Mm-hmm.
But I just have a feeling that, you know, she loves these things so damn much. There may be some sort of conjuring or attempt to conjure of something to bring these things to life as children, or I don't know. But that's the weird feeling I'm getting here.
Okay. I could see that.
There's an attachment to these inanimate objects, and it's almost out of, this is just me talking and my assumption, feeling that there's something here where it's, you know, out of sadness, out of desperation, out of loneliness, that she's trying something she doesn't know about. Or maybe she does know about it now.
Yeah.
And maybe that's where it started, out of not knowing. And that's what's caused some of this to arise. I could be completely wrong.
Maybe she buys those dolls that are supposedly haunted.
Maybe she makes them haunted and sells them. Maybe this is the warehouse of them.
The warehouse of haunted dolls.
This is the Toys R Us of evil dolls.
Okay.
So, I don't know. That's my thoughts.
Yeah.
Don't want to go there.
Mm-mm.
Ever. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Justin writes in, here in the Appalachian Mountains of Kentucky, you grow up hearing a lot of ghost stories. The mountains are full of stories of ghosts from just about every era you can think of. When I was a kid, after my parents were divorced, my mother moved into a house that was about 5 miles from a Civil War battleground field called the Battle of Middle Creek. It was the site of a Union victory led by General James A. Garfield, who later went on to become President of the United States. When we first moved in the house, it needed a lot of work. The floors were covered with ugly 60s-era carpet, which we took up and found hardwood floors. The layout of the floor plans were confusing. The cellar was always the creepiest place to me. It wasn't very well lit, and there was a ladder that hung on the wall next to the door that opened to the exit out from under the back porch. At the top of the ladder was a trap door that opened up to a hidden room that was accessible from my mom's closet. There was another room similar to this one in the guest room that didn't lead to any other place in the house. I often used the rooms when I had friends over and played hide and seek. While I was younger, I never had any sort of experience there. It wasn't until I was older that things started to happen. My bedroom was upstairs in the house. The ceilings were slanted, which made me think the only two rooms upstairs were probably for storage when the house was originally built. My TV sat next to the doorway, which made it difficult to see through the darkness at night. Around the age of 15, when I was awake in bed some nights, I could hear footsteps on the stairs. It wasn't so much a heavy thump as it was the board creaking. I always just wrote it off as it being the old house settling or the family dog. A little later, after this began, I'd hear the footsteps. And once the noise stopped, I could almost make out the figure of a person. Some nights I'd turn the TV off and try to adjust my eyes to the darkness. There was never anything there, though by the time I could see clearly. Within the next year, things really amped up. My mom would get on to me for leaving the refrigerator door open and knocking things over without cleaning it up. She thought I did this in my sleep, and honestly, I did too, due to the fact that I sleepwalk from time to time. Like a lot of teenage boys, I found myself hanging out with the wrong kind of people and would drink on the weekends with my friends. Looking back, the weeks that I managed to get beer or whatever and hide it in my room from when we went camping or fishing on Saturday night, those weeks were worse. The night that caused me to move in with my dad went a little like this. I drove home from playing music and sat down to eat with my mom. After dinner, she did like she always did and went to the living room to watch TV, which sucked because I could never get past her with the massive amounts of alcohol that I sometimes would acquire. So I did like I always did. I'd come in through the back door, hide it in the kitchen, or hide it in the hidden room that was located in the guest room. After everyone went to bed, I'd go back downstairs, get everything, and hide it in my closet. Must have had to do this way a couple dozen times. So after everyone went to bed and I was able to, I went back downstairs and opened the door to the room. It was a different feeling this time, though. And after I picked up a couple of paper bags full of booze, I stood as quiet as I could, trying to make out the noise coming from the dark in the back. It sounded a little like whispers. After standing there a while, I figured it was just my mom's TV, because it sat close to where the sound was coming from. I went back to my room and hid my stash, jumped back in bed, turned the TV on. I could hear my dog downstairs walking around. I knew he was trying to find a place to go to sleep. After I noticed the clicking of his claws stopped, I relaxed, drifting off. A couple hours later, I felt what I thought was the dog lying on my leg. Thinking it was him, I close my eyes and try to go back to sleep, but while I was lying there, I heard his claws clinking on the hardwood floor. When I sat up to see what it was in the bed, there was nothing there. But the pressure was still there. I jumped out, ran out of the room, and jumped in bed with my mom. When I told her what was going on, needless to say, she didn't believe me. So the next morning, I began to pack my clothes. I was going to move in with my dad. Totally freaked me out. Packed a duffel bag that I had, and because of where the closet was, I had to shut my bedroom door to get into it. After a while, I felt more comfortable and started goofing off. I'd taken apart a single-shot 12-gauge that my dad bought me for squirrel hunting and was cleaning it. Earlier that morning, I had told a buddy of mine that lived close to me what had happened and told him I'd planned to move to my dad's. While I was sitting there with the cloth in one hand and the gun stocked in the other, I heard the door shut downstairs. I assumed it was the front door, and since my mom and stepdad were at work, I assumed that it was my neighbor Josh. I heard the footsteps come up the stairs, and then a light tap at the door. After the knock, I invited Josh in, but he never opened the door. I was putting the shotgun back together when I heard the knock a second time. This time, I decided to have some fun, and after I put the gun back together, I aggressively said, "Come on in." Oh, there we go. Let's try this again. "Come on in, you son of a bitch," closing the gun at the end of my sentence. As soon as the words left my mouth, something hit my door so hard that it slammed against the closet door behind it. I ran as hard as I could. I was outside in my truck. Nobody was in the house besides me, and Josh couldn't have hit the door, ran down the stairs, and out of the house without making a noise or being seen. After I sat in my truck for a few hours, trying to get the courage up to go back in and get my stuff, I finally made my way back to the door under the carport. As I opened the door, I can remember thinking, I'll be fine as long as the lights are on, just to have all the power go off in the house. I decided there was nothing in that house I needed that much and left for my dad's. A couple of months later, my mom called me and asked if I'd been at her house. I kind of laughed and said, "Nope, not for a while." She then told me someone had been in there because the refrigerator and freezer were left open and a carton of orange juice spilled on the floor. After a week or so, I saw my mom at my grandparents' house, where she showed me a video from an old VHS recorder of an unseen force opening the cabinets and the refrigerator and even sliding a coffee cup off of the counter and it breaking on the floor. Since then, my mom moved out as well as the people that bought the place. In the past couple of years, the house was torn down. I'd never experienced anything like that before, and although I have had a few other experiences since then, it's not been anything comparable to that house. Thank you for reading my story. I love your show. Keep the podcasts coming.
Makes you wonder if they had to tear the house down because nobody would live in it.
Because just making it very obvious and uncomfortable for anyone showing up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's interesting, being able to go watch some family videos of your haunted house.
Yeah.
After the fact.
Don't you know that's creepy? But like with the bad tracking and everything, and all of a sudden the fridge opens by itself.
Yeah, that's really creepy.
That'd be great.
Although back in those days, you could really mask a lot of shit, you know, because of the bad tracking and the horrible video quality. You could make videos really, you know, you could pull off some of those stunts if you were to make them fake.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming this is real. They're showing it to family.
Yeah, there's no reason for them to not have a real ghost story.
I wonder how many videos of that nature where paranormal things were happening were ever sent into America's Funniest Home Videos.
Ooh, I don't know.
Back in the day. How do people even submit to that show now? Because it's still on.
Yeah.
Remember, it used to be like, mail your VHS to America's Funniest Home Videos. P.O. Box.
They probably email it now.
Just send us your video. And or I wonder if people even send in, or if it's just like, we scour YouTube.
Is it still on?
I think they still make new episodes of it, yeah.
Okay, because I didn't know if it was new or if it was just reruns.
No, I'm pretty sure it's just, it's all the original, or it's new episodes.
Okay.
But they must be just like, hey, post your video to our website, and that's got to be how it is now.
Yeah.
I haven't watched the show forever, so.
No.
But I do remember the music of when you get to vote, the do 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 do. And they pulled those like little things out of the front of the seats and everybody pressed
the
their buttons. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yep. The old Bob Saget versions of America's Funniest Home Videos.
There's only so many times you can watch somebody get hit in the crotch with a baseball bat.
Yeah, yeah. What's interesting, I was reading the other day, there's a lot of archivists now really asking people to go through their old home movies, like all the way back to whatever you have, essentially, whether it be 8mm, you know, way, way back to VHS, and load it. You don't have to say who anybody is if you don't want to. It's not for commercial purposes. It's for archiving what life looked like at certain points.
Okay.
Because so much of, you know, the filming that was done back then that was actually, you know, publicly shown was professionally shot for this or for that. But what archivists are going after are real life shots, mm-hmm. not things that were staged for a commercial or a movie or this or that. Just what did the world look like? And of course, there's a lot of it out there, but they're finding really interesting things in some of these videos that people are posting. Not paranormal, but just things that people like were like records weren't kept on a certain model of car existing. Or it's like it was rumored that something like then like lo and behold, in somebody's movie of Johnny taking his first steps in the front yard, there's that car.
Okay.
That like nobody was could really confirm existed.
Okay.
And just other oddities that people are, you know, they're investigating and figuring out what things were, and it's just kind of neat.
That is neat.
You know, and just seeing life as to what it was at that point in time on a real humanistic basis. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, there's going to be far more than enough of this point in time for people sure. to look back on. But, you know, 10 years prior, no. Yeah. It's you're fairly limited as to what was taped and what wasn't taped.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just kind of an interesting thing. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. We were talking the other day about that a little bit with when we were watching some of the 9/11 anniversary coverage.
Yeah.
And a lot, I mean, depending on what your age is, little fact, camera phones didn't exist on 9/11.
Yeah.
Now, I think, you know, you tell, you know, a teenager that today, they're probably thinking half these videos were shot on iPhones or something. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, it was camcorders. And I was saying it's really amazing how well they were able to up a lot of the quality of the video that was shot that day, because a lot of it was VHS camcorders.
Yeah.
Or something of that caliber, and they've really made it more high definition after seeing a lot of the clips that have been restored and such. Yeah, back in that time, no camera phones, nothing like that existed. It was like 2002, 2003 when that stuff started popping up.
Yeah.
And they were horrible quality.
Yeah, they were.
They were like worse than VHS at first. And now, of course, they're great. But anyhow, interesting little tidbits. Nicole writes in, my name is Nicole from Georgia. When my friend and I were seniors in high school, we had a little part-time job that allowed us to leave school, but counted as school credits. My friend Lauren had a job at the local art center, making sure guests checked in and also closing up at the end of the day. I'd always go sit with her while she closed up because she was alone and it was a fairly big building right in the middle of downtown. Once, I went to visit and sit with her until closing time, and we were just walking around checking all the doors to make sure everything was closed up when we started hearing piano playing. I should also mention that this art center also has a museum-type thing for a local pianist by the name of Ronald Hayes. He was the first African-American classical singer to have an international career on the concert and operatic stage. And they have one of the original pianos that he played on the top floor with a statue of him sitting at the piano like he's playing it. That piano and one other in the theater area are the only pianos in the whole building. So we're standing in the lobby and we hear this piano start playing. Look at each other, all wide-eyed because it's just two teenage girls in this building. And there's a random piano playing. So we decide we're going to go check it out and ask whoever is playing to leave since we're closing up. We go to the theater area, which is on the same level as the light on the door. The whole room was pitch black. When we opened the door, there was obviously no music playing, but we could still hear the music. So we go to the second floor where the museum area is and look around. Suddenly we can't hear the music playing anymore. We walk around the second floor and make sure all the doors are locked and that there isn't anybody lurking around, and then head back down to the lobby. soon as we get back to the lobby, we start hearing the music playing again. By this time, we're thinking that one of our friends has snuck in and is playing a trick on us, so we head out to the hallway. But as soon as we get through the doors, we can't hear the music playing anymore. We know that all the doors are locked, and all the lights were off. So again, we go back into the lobby, and we hear the music start up again. Lauren looks at me and says, "Screw it. Someone is in here. They're getting locked in until the morning." We can still hear the music playing as we head for the door, but as soon as we get to the doors, it stops. Could it just be Ronald Hayes still playing from beyond the grave? We never asked if anybody else had any weird experiences, but I wish we had. I love your show. Listen to you all the time at work. Keep up the great work. Thank you for all that you do.
I don't know. It could just be one of the items in the museum, you know, holding some kind of energy, even sure. The piano.
Was it in tune? Was it playing a song? That's my question. Or was it just like random keys as if I was playing the piano?
I don't know.
That's my question. Because that would... I mean, I would think anything that's doing it must be somewhat intelligent, but that may speak to more of what type of intelligence it has.
Yeah.
Is it a demon that knows how to play Bach?
I think they could probably play whatever they wanted.
That's true. Hey, it's playing Bruce Springsteen today. Wonder what that's about. I don't know. It could. I mean, it's hard to say if it is the ghost of the piano player or something else. It could just be being manipulated. It's very hard to say. If you'd like to be less scared, I'd say it's the piano player. That's all it is.
Yeah, he's just playing you a song.
Sure he is.
Mm-hmm.
855-853-4802. Joan writes in, "Hi, Tony and Jenny. My story happened in 1978. My hubby was in the army stationed in Germany. We were renting housing off post. Another army couple lived downstairs, Don and Pat. We became good friends and we'd get together often. One weekend, some of Don's friends, 4 or 5 guys, came over, and all the guys decided to check out the town. They came back a few hours later and had some candles. They took off some graves. Pat said she wouldn't have them in her house. They didn't have time to put them back. So she told them to put them in the storage room under the stairs. The next day, all the guys went into the field for a week, and that's when a few things started happening. I'll tell you what happened during the 2 weeks so this doesn't get too long. I was trying to sleep and heard heavy footsteps walking above me. There was only a crawl space above me, not big enough to walk in. Pat said she kept hearing a strange noise coming from the kitchen, and when she went to look, the heater for the water was on. There's a little tank for water, the dial you set to 1, 2, or 3 and press the button to start it. There was no hot running water unless you did this. She went to bed and woke up in the middle of the night because she was freezing and the heater was turned off. Went to sleep one night with a stereo on, playing a cassette tape, and when I got up in the morning, it was turned off and the tape was on the other side and played halfway through. The guys came back and we made them take the candles back where they got them, and nothing else happened in the house. That's my story. Sorry for the spelling. I've been an EPP on the second day of finding your show. I hope you liked my story. Take care, Joan."
Why would you take candles from a grave?
I don't know.
That's my question to begin with. If, you know, they were just messing around at the graves or what.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't take anything from a grave.
Yeah, that's usually not a good idea.
No.
You know, here's an interesting thing. And I wonder if this ever happens. I'm just thinking back to when I was a kid wandering around graveyards for fun. There was one graveyard that we would bike around. And this is not Ryanji. This is one actually just right down the road from it.
Mm-hmm.
Really a fairly non-spooky one. My grandma's actually in a drawer there. And
In the mausoleum.
It's a drawer.
Don't make it sound like it's a file cabinet.
It's a drawer, though. I mean, it's a drawer in the mausoleum. That's what we always called it.
Anyway.
Okay. Anyway, the mausoleum. She's in that. Anyway, so we'd drive our bikes around there and then sometimes walk around a little bit. It was kind of park-esque, except for the fact that there's graves. The gravestones were all like flat in the ground, so it wasn't like sticking up gravestones.
Uh-huh.
So it did have more of a feeling of a park than a graveyard. So anyway, I remember one grave was the grave of a little boy. And you knew this because there was a lot of toys and such that were put around the grave. No, I did not steal any of the toys.
No, I was just going to say you didn't get that from just the age on the stone.
Well, I mean, it really stood out. I mean, sure, if you looked at the stone, but mm-hmm. I mean, you'd have to read every single stone to determine that. This was just really, it was like, you know, shrine-esque around it with stuff. So there was a lot of toys, like matchbox cars and all sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, I know not to steal something from a gravesite, nor would I want to. But here's my question. How often does that happen where a little kid happens to see that in a graveyard, not really understand what's going on, take something and bring a spirit home that way? Mom doesn't know where that matchbox car came from or said toy. You know, and not that kids are always wandering through graveyards, but I could see the situation of, you know, mom is there visiting, you know, her mom or aunt or whoever's dead. And a fairly safe area for a little kid to kind of wander around for a few minutes while there's some quiet time there at the gravesite that mom came to visit.
Mm-hmm.
And the little one grabbing it, putting it in the pocket, walking away. Mom never catches it.
Yeah.
I wonder how often something like that happens. And you end up with an interesting imaginary friend or a ghost or whatever.
Sure. And I don't know that I would worry too much about that, because I would think that it would just probably be the ghost of that child that would be attached.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that could be a playmate.
Yeah.
If you will. But I'm just wondering if that scenario has ever played out in that way. We've never had a call or a letter stating, when I was a kid, I did this, I didn't know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm wondering if anyone has a story like that. I'm sure in the, you know, evolution of this show, something like that will eventually be shared. But
sure.
It's a scenario. It's one of those rare scenarios I can conjure up and go, never heard that one yet, because it's hard to do that.
Yeah, it is.
So anyhow, 855-853-4802 is our phone number. If you like the show, please support it. Become an EPP, extra podcast person. Get all those bonus episodes, and you keep our show on the air. Sign up on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.